Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. Thank you for listening. We would like to remind you that this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Known as just a silly boy with a feely heart. Please consider supporting the show. Check us out on Patreon or simply leave a review on iTunes. Here's your host and creator of the show, Known Wells.
Greetings, feely humans. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. My name is Known Wells. Also, some people call me Noni Shorts. Today is episode 67, about making a record of mental health through art, with my guest, Holly Chisholm. Holly is the creator of the delightful and wonderful and lovely and life-affirming and make-you-feel-less-alone comic series, Just Peachy. She is on Instagram, at Just Peachy Comic. She's a delight. And we talk about her art and how her art has helped her in making a record of her mental health and through a sort of introspection and feeling and sort of understanding, trying to understand her depression and anxiety and ADHD and panic attacks. We talk about just the overwhelming balancing act of having comorbid diagnoses, why we strive for normalcy and perfection, and a bunch of other things. Before we get into it, a couple announcements. One is Holly's book. She has published a book, which is amazing. It's called Just Peachy, Comics About Depression, Anxiety, Love, and Finding Humor in Being Sad. It is available starting tomorrow. It's available for pre-order now, and it's available for purchase starting tomorrow on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. All those links are in the show notes. You can do that, and you can buy her book. Go buy her book. Support independent artists who are making the world a little better through their feely journey. Also, on the topic of Just Peachy, the book, I am doing a little giveaway. I have one book I'm going to give away. So look out for that. Probably I'll do that via Instagram. So go check out that at You, Me, Empathy. Go check that out. I'll probably link to all that stuff in the show notes, of course. What else? Okay, last thing is please leave a rating and review of You, Me, Empathy in iTunes. Please. Helps out the show. I read your reviews here on the podcast, and it warms my heart. Go warm my heart, you feely humans. Thank you for that. And I guess that's it. Please enjoy this wonderful episode, episode 67, about making a record of mental health through art with Holly Chisholm. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a podcast about exploring the struggles we face in our day-to-day lives as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our neuroses, our mental illnesses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, I'm feeling just peachy to be on another great feely adventure with artist, animal wrangler, and Just Peachy Comics creator, Holly Chisholm. Hello, Holly.
Hello, that was beautiful. That was very well done.
Thank you. And did I pronounce your last name correctly?
It is Chisholm.
Chisholm,
which is,
okay.
Yeah. It's Scottish. It means field of cheese. I am not joking, so.
Wow. Well, why would you ever joke about cheese?
Why would I ever make that joke?
That's amazing. On one level, Scottish, fellow Scott here. on another, cheese. Cheese is the best.
It really is.
What a last name. I love it. I love it
Thank
so
you.
Much. Well, yeah. So happy to have you here. We've been going back and forth via Instagram a bit, and I love your Just Peachy comics. It's such a sort of beautiful personal journey into your own mental health through art, which is just so cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been kind of a crazy 2 years getting to use comics to kind of tell people how I feel and share my deepest, darkest thoughts with the entire internet. So,
yeah, I imagine it's been probably a wild adventure for you. And I do want to delve into that.
Okay.
Before we get to your story, Holly, we always do just kind of an emotional check-in. How are you feeling today? How's your week been?
This week has been one of the more difficult weeks I've had in a while. It's just been weird. My depression has kind of flared up, and I think partly to do with stress. I feel like a lot of times it is typically stress related when I start kind of beating myself up. But my boss is out on maternity leave. She just had her baby, and so work has just been kind of crazy. We've kind of been down a person, and so just kind of struggling this week. I started a new therapist probably like a month ago.
Mm.
And it's just been kind of delving deeper into some of the stuff that happened in my childhood, which I've never done in therapy before.
Okay.
And so it's just been bringing up a lot of weird things that I didn't expect to be so upset about.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, thankfully I feel better today just because I got to sleep in and get a little rest, and then had some fun last night. So
that's good.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I think maybe there's something in the air, because I've had a rough week myself with my depression, and I've hit a particular somber spell in my depression. You know, when I'm curious, like how, like, is the stress thing, like the stress in the relation to the depression, is that a common sort of occurrence for you when you're more stressed, you know, you get, you know, maybe a little bit more down?
I think what it is, and my depression started, like, when I first really noticed, like, oh, I am definitely depressed, this was like 2 years ago, and I was working the most difficult, stressful job I'd ever worked in my life, and I think the depression kind of stemmed from, in my case, it stems from not feeling good enough or feeling like a bad person, and a lot of that is performance related. So when I'm feeling down and like sad and depressed, I struggle to focus at work. Part of that is I was also diagnosed recently with ADHD. So I'm still working out like how that is affected by it. But obviously if you're feeling sad and down and not feeling well, you're not going to focus. You're not performing at your best. So I think part of it's just having added stress and feeling like I'm not getting enough done is kind of like this vicious cycle where it just gets worse and worse, where it's like, oh, I'm not doing well. So then I feel bad about myself and then I don't do as well. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. I can see how those things can be so interconnected. The ADHD sort of keeping you from focusing on your task, and then you feeling, you know, stressed and terrible about that, and then that leading into sort of the darker thoughts and the depression. That, yeah. How with the ADHD diagnosis, what Like, how has that been for you? Has that been hard to deal with?
So, yeah, I had kind of had sneaking suspicions for a while. and it definitely runs in the family. Like, looking back now at, like, seeing some of the stuff that my mom did and some of the stuff my grandpa did on her side, I'm just shocked that none of us were diagnosed sooner.
Mm.
Just, like, forgetting things, losing stuff, like, completely, like, starting so many projects and never finishing them, and self-medicating with enormous amounts of caffeine. Yeah.
So you saw this in your mom and your grandfather?
Yes, my grandfather.
Gotcha.
Yeah, for sure.
Did that impact you in any way? Are you looking back on that time and wondering, like, oh, that seems shitty or whatever? Like, looking back at that time in therapy?
I do feel kind of cheated in, like, from high school. Because I worked really, really hard in high school to try to get good grades. And there was just some subjects I didn't do very well at. And I think it's because it didn't capture my attention. And I just couldn't focus on it. And so just knowing that. And then, of course, there was people abusing Adderall and things like that in high school. I just didn't know that there was even options for people with ADHD, and that it was, like, an actual problem, I guess.
Right.
I had always thought it was always a joke, right? Where it's like, oh, I'm so ADHD or so ADD, but I never actually fully understood, like, oh, it's a mental disorder. And I think part of that was just obviously people making jokes about it, but then just never having, I didn't have enough knowledge about it when I was younger. So
that's such a good insight, Holly, in that you're right. You're totally right. Like, when we as a culture think about ADD or ADHD, you know, I mean, prior to sort of my education about it and learning a little bit more about it and interacting with people who have ADHD, you know, the thought goes to, oh, the sort of, you know, quote unquote, sort of hyper, you know, oddball person who's just, you know, wants attention, or who's just interrupting class or whatever. And certainly that could be a part of it, but, like, that's the stereotype or the hyperbole of what is, as you said, rightfully, a mental disorder that mm-hmm. should be treated and should be looked at.
Right. Yeah. It's just been an interesting experience for me, because my therapist also was saying that a lot of times ADHD is comorbid, which means, like, you know, if you're diagnosed with ADHD as an adult, it's very often that you're also suffering from depression and anxiety. And, again, it kind of feeds in on itself, or, like, is it the cause? Is it the symptom of ADHD? Kind of, like, it's interesting how they work together to make your life kind of miserable.
Well, that's the fucked up part about all of it. Not mm-hmm. fucked up. Like, I think that's negative. But the sort of amorphous monstrosity of, like, mental health is that you're right. Like, there's all this comorbidity, and there's always sort of many things sort of feeding off each other and working together and you know, making things much more challenging to treat.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. You know, one of the things that I've sort of, you know, you mentioned, like, being in therapy and sort of things are coming up that you didn't expect. 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
How did you, like, were there any sort of moments that stick out in your brain being kind of seminal in that sort of depression journey that, like, led to, like, oh my God, I gotta fucking take care of this. Like, something's going on. Did you have any moments like that you wanted to share?
Yeah. So what kind of caused the whole thing I just moved to Los Angeles, and moved in with my boyfriend at the time, and basically, over a very stupid incident involving a chicken sandwich, like a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
Oh, interesting.
We ended up breaking up on the highway, pretty much.
Like, okay.
It was the dumbest thing. But anyways, I basically had this realization that he was abusive, at least emotionally, like very manipulative person, like actively malicious.
What would he do?
Basically, I refused to share my chicken sandwich with him while we were driving. Because
as
he
is your
had
right.
His, as is my right, as is Chick-fil-A sandwich is very sacred, but he had already eaten his and he wanted a bite of mine. And I was like, but you already had yours. This is my sandwich. And he just started screaming at me.
Whoa.
And he was just like, you are so selfish. Like, I can't believe you wouldn't share. Like, you're being so like rude. And then he started driving like 95 miles an hour down, I believe we were on the 405.
Wow.
At night. And I told him, I was like, Andrew, can you please slow down? You're scaring me. And he said, no, I don't care. And that's when I realized, like, oh, he doesn't care about my safety. Like, he doesn't care about making me uncomfortable. And so, thankfully, I like called my mom as soon as we got home. And she was like, you need to get out. You need to go get a hotel and you need to like leave. And I was like, okay. So that's what I did. And, it was just a really rough, rough breakup. And just, he was so difficult. This was also when I was also my job at the time. So I worked for a very small startup based out of LA, and my boss, the CEO, was also one of the most manipulative, horrible people I've ever met. So it was kind of like I had two abusive relationships going on at once.
Ugh,
it was like
that's so challenging.
It was so bizarre. She would like humiliate me in front of everyone and purposely be difficult and like change things just to like test me.
Oh my God.
It was bizarre. It was such a bizarre company because I watched her fire. It basically, if you stood up to her at all, if you disagreed with something she said, she would fire you like on the spot. Which is not a great business practice, by the way.
I've talked about like corporate culture on this podcast before, but I've been in startup situations myself in my day job, and thankfully, I'm working with lovely, feely humans today. But like, yeah, I've been there working with the most vile people who just are so narcissistic, so self-centered, so just harmful. And those people like eat that up. Like people like you and me, Holly, who are sensitive and like mm-hmm. to look inward. Like we're not meant for that world.
No, no. Yeah, so being in that environment was just really taxing on me. I kind of like didn't know how to stand up for myself and was just getting basically bullied at work. And finally, it was just there was just something in me. It was just like, this is the last straw. I can't do this. And I think it was one of my coworkers who I'd been working with for the whole time I was there, she quit, and it was very dramatic and like very, it was kind of like, I felt like I was on an MTV like show where it was just like the startup and like you get voted off the island this week. But
oh
basically
my gosh,
she like
such drama.
Quit. Yeah, it was just very drama, and she quit, and she wrote a whole blog post about why she quit, and just there were some things happening in the background that I didn't know about that were illegal and like things like this. So I was like, I need to get out. So after she quit, I put in my 2 weeks. I was like, I'm leaving.
Wow, you still put in 2 weeks. What a responsible adult you are.
I know. It's because I didn't like before. It was literally, it would be someone disagrees with Lauren that day, the CEO, and then literally she fires them. And like she would do it in this weird way where she would kick everyone out of the building. Because we had a small little office. So she would kick everyone out of the building and then like fire them where no one could see what was happening. We don't have like an HR person, and there was like no justification for it. And then they would just be gone, and then we'd come back. So it's just, I didn't want that kind of drama. I didn't want to have like a public meltdown in front of everyone. So yeah. That's why I wanted to be the adult in this very childish environment.
I hope this company's not still around.
They are, but...
They are.
They are. I actually... The company itself, I really, really enjoyed, and, like, they have a really good product. I'm not going to bring it up.
No.
You can go look through my LinkedIn history and guess.
Yeah, we don't need to... We don't need to name names.
No, but... yeah, it was just... what's interesting about that company is the only person that is still there from when I was working there. There was probably like 30 of us or 15 of us when I left. They are all gone and they have all been replaced except for the CEO. She's the only one still there.
Oh yeah. So, and you know, if she's still the way she is, those people will continue to leave and she'll continue to hire new people and
yep.
You know, yeah.
Overall, I'm grateful because now I can recognize kind of like narcissistic, manipulative behavior. I think both in relationships and then also workplace environments now.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that it was at the same time.
Yeah, that's really a cavalcade of darkness.
Yeah.
So you break up from your boyfriend, you quit your job. Mm-hmm. What happens next?
I started feeling a lot better.
Okay.
The depression.
Were you still in LA at that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Around the time that I broke up with my boyfriend, which was about 6 months before I quit my job, I went to the therapist and I just started talking to her. And
was this your first time in therapy?
Yes, it's my first time in therapy. And she suggested that I see a psychiatrist because I was like crying every day. I was having panic attacks. I was basically like not able to do my job.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I realize that, you know, maybe this would be helpful, certainly for me, but maybe for the listeners as well. Like, can you describe what a panic attack feels like?
Oh boy. Yes. So this is, yeah, it feels like, at least for me, it manifests as me crying uncontrollably for like 30 to 40 minutes. I like can't breathe. It's kind of like you're drowning. Your body shakes and, I get like loops in my head of the same thought over and over. And usually it's something like, either it gets really dark. It's things like, oh, you didn't deserve to be born. Like you, or like, I want to die or something like that. So it's not necessarily like, sometimes you feel like you are dying as well. So the first time I had one, it felt like I was like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Cause my heart was beating so fast.
Right.
But it's just kind of completely shuts me down. Like I can't do anything. I literally have to lay on the ground and kind of like, now I practice deep breathing to slow my breaths down. But yeah, it's pretty intense. It's like a full body experience.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing.
Have you ever had one?
I haven't. No, that's not something I struggle with. You know, I do have pretty severe anxiety at times, but it hasn't manifested into panic attacks. Although, now that I'm like talking about it, I do remember there was a point in my life, I think in my teenage years, and during the time where I started to, like, you know, develop my anorexia, I did find myself in moments really anxiously focusing on my breath, in a way like, oh, you know that like weird thought where you think like, what if the air goes away? You know, like, what if I breathe in and there's nothing there? And like, I went through moments like that where I would think about the air, and then I would really not fully panic, but I would really kind of get really anxious and scared about like, oh, what if the air went away? And I'd start breathing a little bit, shallower. I don't know if I'd call that a panic attack, but that's probably my only sort of experience, maybe similar.
I can't diagnose you or anything, but, if it was like a repeating thought, like, oh my God, the air is gone, the air is leaving. Like if it was that over and over again, then it may have been like a mild panic attack or something. Cause I've definitely had, there's been panic attacks that last 10 minutes and then there's ones that last for like 40 minutes.
Mm.
So it can vary, and then it manifests differently for every person. So
are you telling me we could be panic attack buddies?
Okay, yes.
PABs?
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 Oh my God. Yes, yes.
Awesome.
We can.
Thank you.
But yeah. Good.
So, you start going to therapy, and then you went and see a psychiatrist?
Yes. And I was put on multiple different types of medications.
Which ones?
Oh, geez. Okay. So bupropion was the first one that he prescribed. That one was weird. I felt super tired and I had no desire to drink at all, which was new.
Mm-hmm.
I used to drink every single night at the time. And, I just couldn't, otherwise I'd fall asleep instantly. So that was good. But then it turns out I was allergic to it.
Oh.
So I ended up just like breaking out in hives and having to like leave work.
Yikes.
Covered in hives. So, that was fun. And then, he put me on Prozac, which I didn't find that it helped me. I was on the lowest dose though. So I didn't see the benefit. So after about a year of being on Prozac, I got off of it. But the thing that's really saved me is Lamictal, which is a mood stabilizer.
Okay.
It's usually used to treat people with bipolar, which I don't have, but I was, basically the thought process behind it was that I was having terrible mood swings where I would feel fine, and then suddenly, like, within the span of 10 minutes, I was, like, the lowest low. So, and it was just causing me to get worse and worse, basically.
Hmm.
Just because there was no stable ground for me to stand on with my emotions.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you start taking Lamictal, and it helps.
Yes. I also, around this time is when I started my comics, so about the time right after I broke up with my boyfriend, started seeing a therapist. She suggested I journal, which I don't like. I hate doing it.
What do you not like about journaling?
I don't like going back and looking through my entries, which is what I think you're supposed to do. I don't know. I understand that writing and getting it out on paper is helpful, but I feel like I'm just a whiny. I'm just too whiny, and I don't like.
Well, that's the thing about, like, that is a perfectly valid opinion, but my opinion of it, I don't really journal, but I do try to write every day because I'm working on a book. But I think the focus, the main act of it and the main sort of catharsis of it is just getting it out,
right?
Regardless of what it looks like or sounds like, that doesn't really matter. It's really just about getting it out. And I think, you know, I've heard from a lot of people that it helps them, but it's not right for you, and that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it helps like so many people. I've always been like an artist.
You're an
I've
artist,
always been drawing. Yeah. So I just wanted to get my ideas out a different way. I also, the other thing about journaling is I feel like, because I'm a very visual person, I just want, it feels very solitary. And I wanted to share my work, and sharing journal entries about how sad I am just didn't seem like, I don't know. I wanted something.
There's not a lot of levity there.
No. And it's like longer form. I just wanted like a very simple way to kind of quickly explain how I was feeling visually. I think that people resonate with like artwork and visual stuff, especially
totally
with emotion.
Yeah, they totally do. It's a softer in to like relating to someone, I think. Because just reading like a journal entry first of all, it's tremendously vulnerable, but also can be, you know, maybe even jarring or triggering. Whereas what you're doing with Just Peachy, you're providing a really beautiful levity in making it, you know, comedic at times, and making it, you know, sort of self-deprecating at times, and even just like, hey, this is me and this is who I am, in a way that has some softer edges, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the title itself was like, I was in the lowest point of my life, and it's like, oh, everything's just peachy.
Yeah.
It's just kind of how...
That's a perfect title, yeah.
Right, yeah. My good friend came up with that title for me, so...
Love it.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Shout-outs galore on this podcast.
Shout-outs.
So when you started that, was it... First of all, when you heard that from your therapist, like, hey, you know, you need to start... Really, it's making a record of your mental health in a way. Like, when you heard that, did you start right away? Did it take you some time? Were you scared?
So it was interesting because it was very near the new year. So like, kind of end of December when I started drawing, and, one of my friends on Instagram was also an artist, and he started doing like a sketch a day. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to do a comic a day starting with the new year. So that's kind of what I aspired to do. I didn't end up doing that, but at the beginning, I was really good about just like getting a comic out every day, no matter what, and just, you know, sharing it with the world. And it kind of made me feel less alone because people would comment on it and see it. And I'd get comments that are like, oh, yeah, I deal with this all the time. And so like even comics that I thought were like incredibly specific just to me, just to my situation, I find it's like, oh, so people are like, oh, yeah, this happened to me the other day. I'm like, oh, I'm really not alone in my weird thoughts and emotions.
What an amazing feeling that is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been good. And it makes me feel good to, you know, kind of get the word out about real problems that people have with mental health and just feeling bad. And I think especially now, because so many people have depression now. What is it, like 40% of the adult population in the U.S.? I don't know. Don't quote me on that.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a very big number.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so just trying to educate people as well, which I'm still learning. So I'm still educating myself about how to deal with depression and anxiety. But yeah, it just feels good to be able to share my thoughts in such a kind of fun, funny way. That's the other thing. I'm incredibly sarcastic and, I love dark humor. It's one of my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Me too.
Yeah.
So starting this comic, and what has it been like? What is the, you know, obviously you're getting you know, you're getting people sort of relating to you and finding that validation, which is such an important part of mental health. How has your family reacted? How have your friends reacted? Have you been met with any pushback? Like, what has the reaction been like overall?
That's what I was kind of shocked, because especially at work, just like when people found out about my comic at work, I'm in a much better job now with a much better group of people around me, and they're all very supportive, thankfully.
Oh, good.
But when they first found out about it, it was like, oh my God, they're going to fire me. Like,
that was your fear?
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, it's basically admitting like, hey, there's going to be days where I literally don't want to get out of bed, which doesn't really sound good to employers, I'm assuming.
But that's just self-stigma talking.
I know.
Do you still struggle with the stigma, the self-stigma? And self-shame?
Yeah, I do think I do. Sometimes I'm just like, why am I like this? Like, why is there, why can't my brain just be normal? It's just
what
kind of
normal?
Frustrating. I don't know. Just I see some people and they like actually enjoy waking up in the morning and like
I don't know any of those people.
I only know a few, but I just wonder. I like think about it sometimes. It's like, I wonder if people just are like happy most of the time. Like maybe 90% of the day that they just are happy and like have a bunch of energy. Like, do people like that exist? I sometimes like fantasize about like meeting someone like that.
But what would that be like for you? Like, let's say you are Holly, the type of person who is happy all the time. What would your life be like?
I would probably, this is the big thing. I have a lot of shame about like not exercising. And I know that obviously you struggled with body image yourself.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of that as well. I think everyone does. But yeah, just like trying to be healthy and fit and like keep, thankfully I've like never restricted my eating or anything like that. I've never had that urge because I love food so much and I can't imagine not eating at, but just trying to, my ideal self would be, you know, wake up in the morning at like 5 a.m., go jogging for some reason, and then
for some reason,
and then like I mean, obviously I just, with my ADHD, I think there's something about, I don't know if it's my ADHD or if it's just my personality, I want to do like 10 million things, like, you
sure.
know, yeah, and yeah. I'm a creative person, so it's like I constantly want to be putting out more work and yeah. more stuff and making more content, because it's what I'm passionate about. So like perfect Holly would do that every single day, but obviously I don't. So
I'm going to challenge you for a second and make it and give you space to just be who you are. Because here's the thing, Holly, like, I get that. I get all those feelings. I feel like I'm a creative person. I'm a writer. I've been a writer my whole life. Mm-hmm. I want to create things. I want to do things all the time. But like, there's a certain point where we as humans, I feel, need to come face to face with the fact that we are all so different. And mm-hmm. there's no normalcy. There's no perfection. We all have what we have. And I feel I wouldn't want a life that's just like pure joy and happiness, because like I posted a quote, a Dorothy Parker quote the other day that I love. And it's basically just like about how we in our pain and struggle and in those dark moments find the greatest wisdom and the greatest sort of learning about ourselves as humans. And I wouldn't trade any of that for anything. And you know, you are creating this beautiful webcomic that is connecting with people, that is destigmatizing mental health, that is making people feel less alone. That is a beautiful gift. And sure, like, I struggle with shame and feeling like I don't deserve love all the time. But I also have to, and you have to, and we all have to, like, find moments of, like, you are enough. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, that's what I think that's the, like, number one thing I'm working on in therapy, is just taking a second to, like, breathe and realize that, like, I don't have to be a perfect person, and that there's just no perfect people, for sure. I always want to be better. That's my thing.
Yeah, and I think that's valid and valuable, and I do think we as humans, if we're not growing and learning and sort of bumping into things and sort of learning from our experiences, then you know, we're stagnant, and we're not doing this, we're not growing, and we're dying, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think there's so much in culture, and there's so much in society that especially American culture, that tells us, oh, we need to, like, crush it all the time. By the way, never use that term. I hate it with a passion.
Hustle.
We got to hustle. We got to crush life. We got to, you know, just kill it. And, you know, all this aggressive language I hate. You know, and there's such a, but, like, obviously that's, like, the hyperbole of it. But there still is such an entrenched idea that we need to, like, always be moving and always be making achievements in life. And, like, that is... it's very persuasive, but it's not reality.
Mm.
You know, humans aren't meant to do that all the time. Yeah. You know, we need to sit on the couch and snuggle with our pups for a day. You know, we need to sit with our feelings. You know, the people that are crushing it all day long, who say that and use those words and drink, Four Loko or whatever, those people aren't looking inward. Those people aren't, like, doing the work that you're doing and exploring your mental health.
It feels like a full-time job sometimes.
Oh, 100% it is. Yeah. And it's exhausting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even the medication journey alone is an exhausting one.
For sure.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, so... I love Just Peachy Comics. I think it's a really fantastic thing. We'll plug that toward the end, but I did want to, you mentioned it earlier. I did want to talk a little bit about your relationship with alcohol and that sort of journey. Where are you at with that?
Man,
if you're comfortable talking about it.
I will. It has been a struggle. First of all, realizing that I was having a problem, and then
what just, made you realize you had a problem?
I think it was just my boyfriend. It was one of those things where he and I would drink together, and I would keep up with him. And he's like a 6 foot tall, like he weighs probably, you know, 80 more pounds than I do. And the fact that I was able to keep up with him, but then, it was just way too much. I was drinking probably 3 or 4 times the recommended amount for women, like a week. And I would get in fights with him. I used to be like a pretty happy drunk, I guess, when I first started out. I'd go out dancing and things like that, obviously. But I don't know, this past year or so, I just started turning into a nasty, mean person. And I think that's part of it might be, you know, the anger that I've had from childhood just kind of manifesting itself when I was, like, blackout drunk, basically. But my relationship with my boyfriend is really important to me. He's, like, a really, really good guy, and so I didn't want him to see me like that, and I didn't want to be a mean person. And so just, like, realizing that, like, alcohol turns me into kind of a monster, and that I am not able to control it. That was the other big thing, is like thinking like, oh, maybe I'll just have one or two or five. it just completely escalates.
So you would drink until you were blackout drunk most of the time, or just,
you know, I keep doing it until you were not necessarily blackout drunk, because I have never truly like blacked out more than a couple times. But it's just to the point where I would start getting belligerent, just like argumentative, like very just.
Yeah. It was affecting your emotional state.
Yeah. And then the next day I would feel absolutely terrible. It wasn't like hangover. It was like deep, deep, like shame. And, you know, nothing great has ever happened to me because of alcohol. Like, I've had fun times, but it's like, even if I had not drank and gone and done the same situations, you know, go out dancing with friends, I don't think it would have been a bad time.
Right.
You know, I just don't think the alcohol has ever added anything positive overall to my life. And I have done so many things I regret while drinking. You know, drinking was, I think, is directly related to my panic attacks as well. So the more I've been drinking, the more likely I am to get panic attacks. Yeah, and it's been rough, because kind of once I realized, like, oh, I have an issue with this, I need to stop. I tried going to an AA meeting, and it's just really sucks because of my Southern Baptist upbringing. I'm just like super, I just can't, anything that with religion really is difficult for me. I don't want to be around it anymore. It's kind of linked to some of my traumas and like self-esteem issues growing up. So I tried going to an AA meeting and just didn't feel comfortable. I've actually been reading, there's a really good book called This Naked Mind. And I've read that one, and I would highly suggest it for anyone that's looking to like cut down on their drinking, or think, you know, they might want to quit, because that one was really helpful. But I mean, I'm still struggling with it. Like, to be honest, I had a couple drinks last night, so it's just like not great, because I really know I need to not be drinking. So we'll see how that goes. That's part of the reason why I'm in therapy right now. It's such a, sorry, I'm talking your ear off.
No, I love it. Don't be sorry.
It's such an interesting addiction, and such a difficult addiction, because everyone thinks that they're immune to it. So it's like everyone, like 80% of the adult population drinks in the US.
Yeah.
And it starts out that way. You can control it. When you first start drinking, you don't feel compelled to have the sixth drink, or, you know, and it just slowly sneaks up on you. It's not like heroin, or like, you know, it's not a quick addiction, but it does, it's an addictive chemical. It will slowly over time wear you down. Yeah. And, yeah, I think another wake up call was just my psychiatrist telling me that, I mean, it's a depressant, and so the more you drink, the more likely you are to show depressive symptoms afterwards.
Yeah, just to relate to you, so I've had a long history with alcohol myself. Started drinking when I was 13.
Wow.
You know, just I think my first drink was like warm Chardonnay, you know. That was very fancy.
That is very fancy.
Stole it from my parents. And so I drank a, you know, a bit like in junior high. And then by the time I got to high school, you know, would drink here and there. But by the time I turned 21, I just like didn't drink that much. And, but in my 20s, during sort of my really darkest moments, and I think this is really related to like me not having the emotional language or tools yet, I would drink a lot, and I can drink a lot. I just have that capacity. And so I would just by myself all the time. I would never get blackout drunk. I would rarely get drunk, but I would drink a lot because I can. And it started to really make all the depression worse, because I wasn't seeing a therapist. I wasn't doing any of that sort of inward seeking. And so I quit. You know, realizing I did, you know, maybe have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, I did quit for 5 years or so. And that was, I don't know, many years ago. And I still think about it today. Like, I still probably drink more than I should. I drink wine. I love wine.
Yeah, me too.
I can't drink beer or anything. I don't drink heavy alcohol, hard alcohol, rather. But yeah, I probably drink more than I should, but so I have a weird relationship with it, because I do think maybe I should not drink as much as I should, but it's not affecting my relationships or maybe it's impacting my depression. It probably is. I mean, I don't know. I'm still working through it myself. Point is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing too, because I think it definitely affects people differently. I have the genetic predisposition.
Sure.
To it. Like, my boyfriend drinks and he doesn't have any issues. He's completely like, he doesn't change his mood or anything like that. So it's just, and he could quit tomorrow if he wanted to, probably. Yeah. So, but for me, it's just the thing that's kind of scary is like, I want to cut down, I want to stop, and I feel powerless to do so sometimes. I think part of it is just I do use it to like kind of shut my brain off.
Yeah.
It is like, it's a form of that's alcohol abuse. Like, that's what that is.
Right.
It's like
intent is a huge part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I want a glass of wine with dinner because it tastes good and stuff. That's different than like, I want to have 5 glasses of whiskey so that I can fall asleep because my brain is so full of stuff and I just want to turn it off.
Numb it out. Yeah.
Like, yeah, so it's been difficult. I hope that with this new therapy that I can find something else that will work for me as far as like finding something, a way to help me relax. And then also like, it's kind of this weird, sick, like twisted thing where I feel like sometimes I do it to self-sabotage. So it's almost like in a similar vein of like, I don't know, cutting or self-harm, where it's like, I know that this is bad for me. I know I shouldn't be doing it, but I'm a bad person and I deserve I deserve to, you know, treat myself badly, basically, which is so fucked up.
Yeah, but it's so human. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you in therapy, you're working on the sort of the self-hate, the self-shame, all that stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
So hopefully it'll get better, and it's giving me a lot of material for my comics. That's something I worry about too, is like, that's the thing I thought about. It's like, if I'm ever like out of my depression pit and like get my life kind of in order, it's like, will I run out of ideas for my comics? Am I self-sabotaging? Like, I need more material quick.
No, you'll never run out of material.
I won't. At this point, I have so many
plus ideas. You know, the thing about art is like, it transforms, right? Like, it can change over time, and maybe these years are Holly's about her depression and relationship with alcohol, and maybe in 5 years it'll be about something completely different and also reach people and connect with people in a way, you know, like, so there's, you don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, no, I'm not too worried about it.
Good. Well, thank you for sharing that. I was just curious about your, you know, you had mentioned it, and I know you've talked about it a little bit on your comics, so I do appreciate that. I think it's, yeah. I do think it's something a lot of us can relate to and struggle with. So I appreciate your vulnerability.
Thanks. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit just about, like, I guess the comic, like, I mean, we've already sort of talked about it, but I guess, what can people find at your comic? Like, what are they going to, why would someone, go to read your comic? What are they getting out of it?
Oh boy. I want to say that it's just kind of like a way to, they're getting like insights that they're not alone in their suffering and in their sadness. I think a lot of people think that, like, oh, why am I like this? Like, this is so terrible. Why am I thinking these thoughts? No one else thinks these thoughts. Like, everyone else is normal. And which is what I find myself doing a lot. I like compare myself to others, which is so ironic, because it's like the whole point of my comics is to like let people know that's like, no, there's definitely a bunch of people that feel this way, and that it's like nothing to be ashamed of. Plus I want to make people laugh. Like, it's one of those things where depression is so scary to talk about. But it's really kind of funny that your brain is just like trying, it's kind of backfiring on itself. Especially anxiety, is like the whole point of anxiety is to protect you.
Right.
It's like the same thing that says like, put your seatbelt on when you're going to drive, because, you know, you need to be safe, that kind of anxiety that's helpful. But then it's like your brain just being like, everything is danger. calling your boss is danger. Talking on the phone is danger. You can't go outside at all because something horrible might happen. So it's just like kind of overdrive. So I think that's really funny in some ways. It's like this.
It is funny. Like, I do think like that is a healthy, like I have this, running thing in my head where, and it helps my mental health to look at the world, in a way that, or describe it as being kind of absurd. I use that word a lot because it is absurd. Like, it is absurd that we're here. It is absurd that our brains do what they do. It is absurd that we're, you know, able to have babies and, you know, repopulate the earth. Like, it's all like bonkers, right? And so, like, if we're not going to delve into that a little bit, what's the point of living?
Right. Yeah, I think it's just, I don't know. I choose to kind of understand the world through comedy because it is absurd. Like, none of it makes any sense. Nobody knows what they're doing. Like, everyone thinks that there's people out there that have it all figured out, but it's just kind of a joke. And I want to say that that's like a pretty nihilistic thing to say, but honestly, if you can find joy in like the absurdity of it, then I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so that's kind of what I hope people get out of it, is like not taking their thoughts so seriously. And also just like, kind of seeing how ridiculous some of the thought processes are. So like helping people recognize, like, when I'm having a depressive thought or like an anxious thought, it's not me. It's my dumb brain that's just like putting it there. And it's just, it's not me. It's not, yeah. I'm not my thoughts. So, and I can choose to recognize, like, okay, I realize I'm having depressive thought, which is why I kind of separate my characters out from myself. So, like, the peachy character, the girl with pink hair, she's always usually talking to either the depression character or the anxiety character or, like, mental health fairy. And so it's, like, separating them out. I love Mental Health Fairy. He's my he's my favorite creation that I've made, probably.
Well, I think it's really good. I love that you separate them out, because I do think it is important to recognize that we're not it. They're just – they're components of us. Mm-hmm. But we so easily take on the burden of, like, I am depression, I am anxiety, you know, I am this thing and that thing wholly, you know, but that's not the case, because it's just a mixture of little pieces.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the same with, like, how I depicted my addiction, my alcoholism. Just, like, realizing that I was kind of tricked, you know, like, no one goes about, no one ingests alcohol thinking, like, oh, I can't wait to be to the point where I have to drink every single day, otherwise I can't function. Like, no one goes out with the idea of becoming an addict. No one wants to ruin their lives. Like, that's not the goal, right? So I think keeping that, that's why I had my, like, character of alcoholism kind of, like, under a mask in the beginning, because at first I was just using, I was using it to have fun, right? And so it seemed like this fun thing, like, oh, you know, I have confidence now. I can, like, go out and talk to people, because I'm very introverted.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, introverts unite separately.
Separately, yeah.
I do have to say, yes, like, we're doing this podcast over Skype right now, so.
Yes, we're not in person. We're not here in person.
If I could, I would come out to Southern California.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Maybe it happened on your book tour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, man.
So let's transition into that. Well, actually, before we do that and plug all your things, we always wrap up the show talking about empathy heroes. These are folks in our lives who just great empaths, feely humans, lead with their hearts. They could be characters from books or movies. I will go first, name my empathy hero this week to give you a moment to think on that. My empathy hero this week is Pearl S. Buck, the author and humanitarian. The quote, and I'm going to read a quote from Pearl. The quote says, quote, "The person who tries to live alone will not succeed as a human being. His heart withers if it does not answer another heart. His mind shrinks away if he hears only the echoes of his own thoughts and finds no other inspiration," end quote. And I just love that. I just think it speaks to the essential part of living, which is connecting with other humans and leading with our hearts and opening our hearts to them. And I, so yeah, that's a beautiful quote from the author Pearl S. Buck. How about you? Who's your empathy hero this week, Holly?
I'm gonna bring up someone that's always been, like, a source of inspiration for me. So he's, like, constantly my empathy hero, I guess.
Perfect.
Bill Watterson, who's the author of Calvin Hobbes. That's the whole reason I even started drawing in the first place, was just his beautiful, beautiful comics and just the way that he's able to perfectly capture, like, humor, but then he's also able to talk about some really difficult stuff. Like, I was thinking specifically, there's, like, a comic where they find a dead bird, and it's just, like, so beautifully, like, reflecting on life, and, like, just the way he sees things is really interesting, and that he was able to kind of capture a whole generation. Like, I know pretty much everyone I knew growing up read Calvin and Hobbes and, like, loves it. So just he's kind of the reason why that I've always been inspired by comics and just especially his work. And so I feel really like I want to follow in his footsteps, trying to help people understand, like, difficult subjects through kind of like a fun, funny medium, where it's like, can you imagine if Garfield talked about, like, death? I just, it's kind of a ridiculous thing, but, yeah, so I love him, even though he's kind of a famous recluse and, like, doesn't talk to anyone, but
right.
He speaks through his work, so.
Oh my gosh. I am so glad you brought up Bill Watterson. I probably my favorite guest empathy hero, so far. I mean, I'm 10 plus years older than you, and I read comics growing up and a ton of Calvin and Hobbes. And it's why I explored the woods, and it's why I was off on adventures all day without a parent in sight. You know, it's Calvin and Hobbes were my friends growing up.
Yeah.
They were like my companions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love, we have the complete sort of collection in hardcover. It's the best.
I'm looking at them right now. They're on my shelf.
Nice.
And then I went through a brief minimalism phase because of Marie Kondo, which I don't know if you've seen that show.
We've watched a few episodes. My wife's been doing like her sort of stuff for 3 or 4 years now. But yeah, I think she speaks truths. I like her.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
But that's why I only have like 5 books on my bookshelf right now. But
oh,
it's
man.
Calvin and Hobbes.
You should see the bookshelf that I'm sitting next to. It's massive with hundreds of books. We have way too many books. No, I'm not going to say that.
No,
we have enough books. We don't have enough books. We need more books.
more. Awesome.
Well, so thank nice. You for sharing that.
Yeah.
Let's plug all your things. Where can people connect with you, Holly? Read Just Peachy Comics, pre-order your book, by the way, which I did this morning.
Oh,
all of the things. Where can people connect with you?
So I am at Just Peachy Comic on Instagram, and you can follow me there. That's where I post most frequently. It's pretty much like only where I post. you can also find me on Webtoons. I've been uploading there more frequently. And then I have a Patreon, which is also Just Peachy Comics. My book is available for pre-order on Amazon. It's Just Peachy, Comics About Depression, Anxiety, Love, and Finding the Humor in Being Sad. If you just type in Just Peachy under books on Amazon, it'll show up. But that's available for pre-order for, right now it's on sale for $11.94. And it comes out March 17th. So, it says March 19th. And it will also be available in Target and Barnes & Noble's.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So. What a cool thing. Yeah, I already pre-ordered a copy, and I think I'll probably order another one or maybe do a giveaway. I'm not sure yet. But, yeah, good.
Awesome.
Congrats on doing a little book. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a fun experience, and I feel super lucky that so many people resonate with it to the point where I was able to get it published by an actual publisher. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
so cool.
I'm excited for like the future of mental health and like people talking about it more. And I think that the fact that I'm able to get a book published about it is kind of, you know, a
progress.
Sign that progress. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, it's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing all that. Listeners, I'll make sure all of that is linked in the show notes for this episode. Holly, thank you so much for being a guest on Yumi Empathy.
Thank you so much. This has been great. This is my first podcast ever, so I'm very excited.
Yay. That's exciting.
Yay.
Fun. Well, listeners, to you, as I say always, I'm here, you're here, we're here together. on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other. It's Yumi Empathy.